Welcome to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu, brought to you by BAE Systems. Each week, Jared will speak one-on-one with Department of Defense senior managers discussing policies and programs affecting warfighters and how the military meets its mission. On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DoD this week. I'm Jared Serbu. As government research and acquisition budgets get strained under sequestration, one Defense Department organization says it has a way to make sure those limited dollars go further. It's been doing it, mostly under the public radar, for more than six decades. DoD's Information Analysis Centers, part of the larger Defense Technical Information Center, have the job of collecting, analyzing, and disseminating the department's knowledge about science, technology, and business processes so that a new program manager doesn't have to reinvent the wheel when he or she is faced with a tough problem. Our guest this week is Christopher Zember. He is the director of DoD's Information Analysis Centers. IAC's is the acronym. We taped this week's show at the IAC offices at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, starting with a little bit of discussion about IAC's origins and their missions.
So the IAC's, or Information Analysis Centers, actually started in 1946. They came out of a couple of scientists at Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Lab, which was in its early days back then. The idea was that there was a lot of information out there, and they wanted to make sure that we didn't just get our hands on the information and hold it and protect it, but we wanted to make sure it got to the right place. So ever since the beginning, the IAC mission has really been focused on what I would call a need to share or a responsibility to provide. And it's the idea that counterbalances that focus on the doctrine of need to know. The idea that if you want some information, you need to prove to me why you have the right and the need to know that. The IAC certainly recognized that and followed that doctrine, but we focused always for the past 65 years and into the future on having a responsibility as information holders. Mm-hmm. We have to understand the value of that information and where does that information belong. And let me identify who else within the technical community could actually benefit from this information. And then once I've identified you, then we can establish what that need to know is, and I can actually hand that information over to you.
So in other words, you're not just a passive repository of information that other people have to go find. You have a much more active role in that.
Absolutely. And in its early days, the IAC's really focused on documents. And for a long time, even through the 70s and 80s, more recently, especially with social media and more advanced information technology and new ways of communicating, we've been able to explore information and knowledge beyond just the written paper. And so it's not just published reports. It certainly starts with that, but it goes into experience in the field. It goes into the tacit knowledge, the experiential knowledge of the scientists and engineers across the department, government employees, as well as industry and academia. And our partnerships with industry and academia are very important to the IAC knowledge base, certainly.
And how do you store experience? How do you become a repository of that kind of information?
So we've tried to, and we've been exploring new ways through social media to document social media conversations, wikis, blogs. We use the Defense Technical Information Center's DoD Tech Space, which is an online wiki that folks can use, and Techopedia, which allows folks to engage in active communications. But we recognize that even in social media conversations, you're not always going to find some conversation in the past that's going to answer your precise question that you have today. Really, you're going to need to be able to access that subject matter expert. And so it's through accessing those subject matter experts that they can actually take and bring to bear the knowledge and experience that they have to listen to the specific question that we have today, and then to apply that knowledge in real time to answer that question. Sometimes it's even helping to define that question better. We don't always know what we're looking for, and so by accessing the right subject matter expert, we can actually help better define that question.
There's probably no one answer to the question I'm about to ask, but is there any way to characterize the types of information that you hold and try to disseminate?
So the IAC's do a lot of different types of work and collect a lot of different type of information from other work that other folks do. There's very technical work in terms of documenting the technical performance of systems, and it can get into the details of a lot of data, numbers, and performance metrics. System design information certainly is relevant to the IAC's, but it also goes into the area of business processes and application of technology. So it's not just the technical specifications of the technology itself, but it's taking that technology that was developed in the lab, following that technology out into theater, into the field, and testing that operational technology in the field, providing the technical feedback, and then also documenting the user experience and providing recommendations back to the folks in the acquisition community that are developing and enhancing the technology, and back to the labs that are actually developing cutting-edge technology as well.
And can you talk about the process by which you decide, you target an organization or an institution within the Defense Department that needs this information? Do you go out looking, or do they mostly come to you?
So we have a little bit of both, and it may be better to back up at this point and actually describe what the IACs are.
Yeah.
and how we focus them. So,
yeah, let's do that.
So the IACs actually are knowledge centers, information analysis centers, and the department establishes the IACs in areas of strategic importance. So it's actually the Assistant Secretary for Research and Engineering, ASDRNE, the Chief Technology Officer of the department, that has policy oversight of the IACs, and so we report up to him and to that office in that sense. The IACs are established in areas that have strategic importance to the department, so the science and technology policies and priorities for the Secretary of Defense help drive the focus of the IACs. We have 10 IACs today. We're actually transitioning to three more focused IACs in the future. And the IACs execute their mission by two different functions. So we have the basic centers of operations and the technical area tasks. The basic centers really focus on collecting information and serving that knowledge management function. So again, it's not just collecting documents, but it's accessing subject matter experts and really serving as that knowledge center for the technical community. And then the technical area tasks are actually mechanisms where we can build on that foundational knowledge and apply that to operational research and specific questions that folks in the military departments, the defense agencies, the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and others, Warfighter, the COCOMs, have for the IACs. And so each of the IACs has a technical steering committee. The steering committee is comprised of subject matter experts, generally at the senior executive level. We co-chair the steering committee at this from this office, with the senior technical representative within the community. So, for example, in the ChemBio defense arena, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for ChemBio Defense and I co-chair the ChemBio Defense IAC Steering Committee. We have representation from DITRA, representation from each of the military services, and then we also have representation from all of the defense agencies that have a mission in that same area and outside of DOD. So Department of Agriculture certainly has an interest in ChemBio defense, particularly the bio component of that. We have Department of Commerce that's interested in interstate commerce and the implications of any sort of biological or chemical attack on interstate commerce in other areas. FBI certainly has interest and has representatives on the steering committee. And so within the steering committee structure, we actually set the research agenda for the IAC. We identify, based on the past experience of the IAC over the previous 6 months to a year, what trends we're seeing in the questions that are being asked, what trends we're seeing in the research that's being done. So that includes government research. That also includes independent research and development dollars that the contractors are funding. So where does the technical community, from a bottom-up perspective, actually see the conversation shifting? And so the IAC provides that information to the senior members of the technical steering committee. The steering committee then provides that senior executive level view from a policy perspective on where the community should be going, and we then seek to set the research agenda for the future. The IACs also, through the technical area task process, will be responding to individual requirements, and so that's an IDIQ contract vehicle that we use to allow the IACs to respond to the technical questions of the community. And so someone will come. They'll provide a contract statement of work, a statement of requirements. We'll route that through the contracting office, and then the IAC will actually begin working on that.
And the way that these were originally organized, as I understand it, was there was one host, which was usually an academic or a commercial entity. Is that what you're talking about? They were the holders of those IDIQs?
That's correct.
And then how does that change once you go down to three of these basic centers of excellence?
Right. So what we're changing is two things. One, we're consolidating the focus areas. So that allows us to achieve some synergy in areas that in the past had been operated by separate centers. So, for example, currently we have, and in the past we've had, an advanced materials center and a reliability center. And they certainly work together, but they were separate centers operated by separate contracted organizations. Mm-hmm. In the future, those two and some other areas will be combined into a defense systems center. So we can actually better leverage the experience of advanced materials scientists and engineers with those that are focused on systems reliability. bring those together under the same center and be able to better serve the community. It also reduces overhead costs, and at a time when we're certainly seeking to do our best to most efficiently and effectively spend every dollar we have, it helps us to continue to do more while saving some money. As we move forward, these three centers will focus on doing the same type of work, but we're also separating out the knowledge management function. We recognize that there were very different capabilities within industry that could do the knowledge management function versus the capabilities that are best suited to respond to technical area requirements. And so with the technical area requirements, we're actually transitioning from 10-year single award contracts to 5-year multiple award contracts. So in the past, we would compete the contracts amongst industry and academia once every 10 years, and then throughout that 10-year period, that one contractor would continue to perform the work, and they did a great job. But what we recognized in accordance with certainly some direction from Congress as well, was that increasing competition was going to keep our industry partners on their toes and performing at their very best, and it was also going to help drive down costs. And we've actually seen that take effect through the first multiple award contract. Last year, there was a 17% cost reduction. And so with the IAC program being $1.8 billion a year, you apply that 17% reduction across the program once we complete this transition, and you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars that we'll be able to save and redirect for other use, certainly for the department.
So one multiple award contract for each of these technical area tasks.
That's correct.
And everything that you just outlined, I think, happens with a pretty small organic FTE DOD staff, right? I think the number I read was under 100 people.
That's right.
How do you get all that done with so few full-timers?
So we have government folks that are dedicated, and that's the less than 100 people that are really focused on executing the inherently governmental functions of the IAC program. We also have partnerships through our requiring community. So we have several contracting officers, representatives, and associate contracting officers, representatives, technical monitors that come from each of the organizations that actually have individual requirements. So if we have the Naval Surface Warfare Center, for example, that comes and asks us to explore a particular topic and provides some funding for us to explore that topic through a technical area task, a TAT, we'll ask them to identify a technical monitor that will help with that work. And so from the inherent part of the overall program, we help ensure that on the front end of that individual technical requirement, we're building on the research that was already provided. And on the back end, we're taking those lessons learned and we're feeding them back into the information repository and into the knowledge base. Throughout the course of performing those technical requirements, though, it's the individual from NSWC in this case that's actually doing the bulk of the heavy lifting and monitoring the day-to-day operations. And so that's how we're able to really take a small core staff that focuses on the business model and ensuring that we're following that model of reuse and enhancing information, and then build on that through our partnerships with others across the federal government.
That's Christopher Zember, the director of the Defense Department's Information Analysis Centers. We'll come back after a first break and talk about some of the specific on-the-ground results those IACs have produced lately. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Serbia. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest for this week's edition of On DoD is Christopher Zember. He's the director of the Defense Department's Information Analysis Centers. Those IACs, as they're called, are in a period of transition, moving from 10 separate centers of excellence focused on DoD's highest technology priorities down to just 3, but with additional, more focused contract vehicles that center on specific subjects. The idea, as always, is to take the research government organizations have already done and to leverage it into future projects, and to give program managers with tough problems a way to use that knowledge to solve them.
When a DoD organization needs a specific problem solved, what's the value proposition for going to an IAC versus an FFRDC or directly to a contractor of some kind? What is there a particular niche that IACs work in that they're especially well-suited to?
So there certainly are a lot of different mechanisms out there for the government to get work done, but one of the things that we really focus on and we ensure within the IACs is that every time we perform technical work, we're building on that knowledge. The information is out there. through the Defense Technical Information Center for others to use. So through other IDIQ contract vehicles or from the FFRDCs, they certainly can use that information, and they do to some extent. But within the IAC program, we've actually built on 65 years of experience in actually doing that as a part of our core business. And so it's not an extra ancillary function of the IACs. It's actually foundational and fundamental to what we do. We've been trying to continue, especially in the context of sequestration and helping the department be able to effectively continue to operate and accomplish the mission with reducing budgets, increase awareness of the existence of the IACs. We have a lot of folks that use the IACs, as I mentioned, $1.8 billion a year worth of work that we do. That's a significant amount of work, but there are tens of billions of dollars worth of work that we could be doing through the IACs. And the more that we can do, the more we can ensure that we build on that 65 years of experience of reusing information.
And as far as building that knowledge, when research has been done or specific technical work has been done outside the structures of an IAC, what do you do to reach out and make sure you capture that and then that's useful for future endeavors?
That's a great question. So that's where the basic center of operations really comes in, and that's the core group of folks that are focused on knowledge management. They're going out and certainly pulling information in from our technical area tasks that we do internal to the program, but they're also responsible for being connected to everyone within that technical community. So again, back to the ChemBio defense arena, the CBRN Defense IAC, CBRNIAC as we call it, goes out and actually maintains relationships with all of the organizations that are a part of the steering committee, all of the organizations that have a stake and have an interest in CBRN defense. And through conferences, technical meetings, workshops, working groups, and just general business professional relationships that they've had over, 35 to 45 years that most of these folks have actually been working in that technical community, they understand what their pal that they used to work with 15 years ago over at the Edgewood Chem Bio Center is working on, because they know him from, the past work that they did. They've also perhaps served with him in a working group recently and actually tackled a particular topic, and they maintain awareness through the publications, reading publications that are provided by other technical groups as well.
So everything we've talked about before is important but relatively abstract. Let's talk about some of the concrete examples that have come out of the work that IACs have done with military services and agencies. What would you point to as real-world results out of these programs?
The first example that comes to mind is the IAC work with the mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, the MRAPs, and our Reliability IAC, or RIAC, is the one that's been doing that work. We actually recognize the success of the MRAPs in being quickly deployed in theater, but the challenge is that we had a lot of problems with those vehicles breaking down. And so the value of getting them over into the hands of the soldiers that were in harm's way was challenged certainly by these vehicles not always being operational. And so what the RIAC has been doing is going through each vehicle system by system by subsystem and documenting why the systems have failed, taking a lot of technical data readings, analyzing that data, and then actually working with the original equipment manufacturers, the OEMs, to go back and update the maintenance procedures and focused on what's a process called reliability-centered maintenance. And so it's the same process that really allows us to no longer have to change our oil every 3,000 miles, but we have computers that are smart that go through and crunch that data for us and tell us in 6,000 miles or 7,000 miles that we should change our oil. Same process as reliability-centered maintenance is being used in the MRAP vehicles. And so through this process, RIAC has been able to identify over $8.5 billion in life cycle cost avoidance for the MRAPs, which certainly is huge. Beyond just the dollar savings is the increased operational availability of these vehicles that are important to keep our soldiers safe from IEDs.
So just to be clear on the MRAPs issue, is that modifications to existing vehicles that were already fielded that brings those existing vehicle lifecycle costs down?
That's correct. So it's actually changes in the maintenance procedures that would keep certain systems from breaking, and some of that cost is actually in some systems that we were maintaining too frequently. So just like the oil in your car, if you change the oil in your car every 3,000 miles when you only need to do it every 6,000 miles, you just paid twice as much as you needed to. And so in some cases, we should be taking longer to maintain the vehicles, and the systems can last even longer. And so we've increased the operational availability as well by over 3,000 hours per year, which is significant, certainly, for that important resource for our soldiers.
And in that case, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of how you get matched up with DoD organizations that are trying to solve problems. But do you remember exactly how that one came to an IAC?
In that particular case, it was the MRAP Joint Program Office with the Marine Corps that came to us and heard about the work of the IAC, recognized the value of the knowledge and the reliability-centered maintenance procedures that the IAC has developed and that we've used in other situations, and said, hey, we've got a problem we think that you might be able to help with. I think nobody recognized at that point in time that the savings were going to be quite as large as they have been.
So I understand you're also doing some work for U.S. Central Command, putting a railway system in place in Afghanistan. What's that particular program about?
That's right. So the IACs are working with the Afghan national government to put a railway system in place. It's a central feature of the exit strategy for U.S. troops from Afghanistan. And the IAC role in this is not building the railway system, but it's actually advising the U.S. forces and the Afghan national government on how to effectively build and operate that railway system. So this one in particular is being operated by the Survivability and Vulnerability IAC, and we have a lot of experience working throughout the globe with Africa Command, for example, and other areas in identifying terrorist threats and analyzing terrorist threats and then coming up with business processes and ways of effectively operating in environments where there are high activities of insurgent terrorist organizations. And so we're taking that experience and those lessons and bringing that to the Central Command and to the Afghan national government and helping them build some practices for how to effectively build and effectively operate that system.
Transition lens is also something you're working on, which is a little bit of a boutique item compared to MRAPs, but what's that program about?
That's right. So one of the things we recognized was some of our special operations forces over in Iraq and Afghanistan certainly had to have eyewear, protective eyewear for the operational environment that they're working in, except for the challenge was that they had to be able to wear this eyewear out in the bright sun, and they also had to be able to go into buildings very quickly without having to change their lenses. Traditional transition lenses don't change fast enough to be able to adapt to the operational tempo of our soldiers going in and out of buildings. And so what we did is we worked with folks in the lab to develop fast tint protective lenses that actually transition rather than 3 to 5 minutes that the commercial technology took in 1/10 of a second. We worked on developing that, testing it, and then bringing it out to the field and doing some operational testing and getting feedback from the users so we could optimize that. Saved a lot of money, and I think more importantly, provided some relatively small technology, but very important technology to allow folks to complete the mission.
Christopher Zember is the director of the Defense Department's Information Analysis Centers. We'll come back in a minute and talk more about IACs after another quick break. This is On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jared Servia. Back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking this week with Christopher Zember, the director of DoD's Information Analysis Centers. He talked with us before our last break about a handful of recent projects those IACs have worked on in partnership with military services and agencies, and how the various IACs interact with DoD organizations that need to solve real-world problems.
When I hear you talk about some of the specific roles of the different IACs, it seems like there's natural synergies with existing defense agencies, like, for example, the chemical, biological, radiological one. That makes me think of the Defense Threat Reduction Agency. There's probably other alignments in the IACs. Are there formal structures in place that make sure that you have a constant pipeline of communication and knowledge where those natural synergies do exist?
So we have a governance structure in place for each of the IACs, the executive steering committees, that allow us to engage at a senior executive level with those stakeholder organizations. But rather than just do that once a year or once every 6 months, which is the frequency of those meetings, the fact that the IACs are actually staffed not with generalists but with scientists and engineers that have been working in their technical community for 30-plus years in most cases, they've built a rapport with the other scientists and engineers that are in the DITRAs of the world, and other organizations, so that they have that peer-to-peer relationship. They go to the same conferences, they go to the same meetings, they participate in the same working groups, they share the same interests. and they share the same background. And so they maintain a professional dialogue that I think goes outside of any and beyond any formal structure. But we do have that formal structure, certainly, to ensure that that happens.
Understood. I want to talk a little bit about the report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, which I'm sure you're intimately familiar with. The takeaway for me, and I hope I'm not mischaracterizing it, was that IACs have a lot of potential value, but they've been more focused than necessary on specific areas of scientific research and less focused, up until the point the report was written, which was last year, I think, on providing real-world value to acquisition managers, and that the IACs needed to become more involved in the acquisition process.
That's right.
Thoughts on the report, and have you begun to take seriously their recommendations and make changes accordingly?
Absolutely. So the IACs, being a part of research and engineering, certainly have been focused on bringing research information into the community. And we recognize their recommendation and really concur with their recommendation that we need to expand that focus to reach to the acquisition community. That's part of our strategy in taking information and taking technology like the fast tint lenses, for example, and rather than just developing them in the lab and handing them over to folks and saying, here, we hope they work, actually bringing them through and having the IAC stay involved throughout that process, actually bringing the technology out to the field, conducting tests in the field with the folks that are using the technology, and then taking that information back to the lab. One of the other things that we started recently is a new program with IAC field representatives. And we started with a pilot last year, and we're continuing the program in 2014 by expanding it across combatant commands, the warfighters. So we started with one in the Special Operations Command and one in the Pacific Command. And what we did is we took an expert that understood the needs and the mission of those individual commands. We trained them up on the value and the resources that the IACs can provide. And then we put them in place inside the wire within those operational commands. And we said, listen to the challenges that are being faced by that command. Provide them some information on what the IACs can do, and provide us some information on what those challenges are. We certainly have a lot of formal structures for exchanging that information, and we use those formal structures. But there's some value, again, in going beyond those formal reports and listening to the dialogue of day-to-day operations of the guys that are actually doing the work and aren't necessarily filtering that in or digesting that into a formal report. And so through those relationships, again, the IAC field reps are able to bring back to the central IAC program office some very valuable information, information that helps us continue to shape the research that we do, helps us to be able to provide that information to our partners in the labs and share that information with them so that they can refocus their research, and really helps us to improve in the ways that I think CSIS recognized the IACs could continue to improve and add even more value to the defense community.
That's really interesting. So I don't know how long you've had people inside the wire, but has it gotten to the point yet where your folks out there in the field have been able to identify, as you said, problems that IACs might be able to help solve, and you've said, yeah, we got this, and you've gone to work on it?
Absolutely. We've already started doing that. In fact, with the Special Operations Command, Talos is Admiral McCraven's number one priority. He's personally involved in working that particular technology, and the IACs have been involved in helping to identify industry capabilities. It's a very cutting-edge soldier suit that has a lot of enhanced connected communications and sensing information and capability. It pushes the limit of what our industrial base's capabilities are, and the IACs are intimately involved in helping to survey commercial technologies, helping to meet with our industrial partners and vet some of the developmental technologies that they have, and helping to align those technologies with the requirements of the Special Operations Command. So that's one very recent example.
That's Christopher Zember, the director of the DoD Information Analysis Centers, part of the Defense Technical Information Center, headquartered at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, where we recorded this interview. Back with one more segment after a final break. This is on DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Thanks for listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Christopher Zember is our guest this week. He runs the Defense Department's Information Analysis Centers. Those organizations, if you're just joining us, have been up and running for 65 years now, meant to be centers of excellence for specific fields of science and technology that matter to the Defense Department. Their job is to collect, analyze, and maintain the knowledge the military gets from research projects across the various services and agencies. And when they're asked to help solve a specific problem, they do that too, as we heard with mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles and military-specific transition eyeglasses. In our last segment, we talked about a recent report by the Center for Strategic and International Studies that said IACS had a lot of untapped potential, that they should leverage their resources to help acquisition managers make better decisions.
Back specifically on the CSIS report, their recommendations were that IACS align themselves specifically with the tenets, I think, of the Better Buying Power Initiative. Have you gone through and started to make some of those changes to bring about that alignment?
So one of the things that we've really focused on in terms of alignment isn't restructuring the IACS into new areas, but as we worked with CSIS and understanding the intent of that recommendation and how we can best meet it, we really focused on separating out the basic center operations, the knowledge management function of the IAC. In the past, the individuals and the organizations that were working the technical requirements were also working the basic centers, and we recognized that those are very different sets of capabilities. So we've actually been able to achieve another important objective of better buying power and of the administration's objectives as well by doing more for small business. So we've taken these knowledge centers and we've actually set them aside for performance by small business interests. And so small business are actually able to come in and due to their unique perspective, have a lot more access to some proprietary information that some of the large businesses couldn't get access to. So, for example, we have a center called the Cybersecurity and Information Systems IAC, CSIAC. Mm-hmm. It's our first small business consolidated IAC, and that IAC is particularly working with collecting weapon systems cost data and performance data. This is an area that we've recognized that we can improve in as an acquisition workforce. And what we're doing is we're collecting the information on our cost estimates and what the actual cost of those systems were, and then characterizing each of those individual systems based on complexity, based on how many connections to other systems there are, and all the various different data points about each of those individual systems. Collect all of that data, and then we've developed a tool that can actually parse that data, can mash it up in different ways and make sense out of it so that somebody else in the future can go back and say, okay, here's the situation I'm faced with. I have this particular type of system that I need to develop a cost estimate for. How do I develop a good cost estimate for it? In the past, it was that individual and their peers and that organization's experience that was primarily used to develop those cost estimates. And we've recognized that often, periodically what happens is those cost estimates in reality, you know, explode multiple times beyond what the original estimates were. So through this, we're actually able to have a much more data-driven process in collecting a broader a range of data from various weapon systems, being able to characterize those systems so we can match up the ones that best fit our immediate needs and better estimate the cost of the future systems.
Yeah, that gets a little bit more to something that you were starting to talk about at the beginning of the interview, which is the whole idea of reducing duplication, which is, I think, something that you guys talk about a lot here. Talk about the ways in which IACS do that specific duplication avoidance function.
Absolutely. So sometimes let me start off by saying that sometimes in research, duplication, as we define it in the lay sense, is valuable.
Sure.
But what we want to focus on is ensuring, first and foremost, awareness. And so the role that the IACS take on is, rather than having all of the technical folks that have a technical mission and a very technical background, rather than having them take on the burden and the responsibility of digging through the decades worth of research and trying to find, you know, anything that might be relevant, the IACS actually have intimate familiarity with all of that research. It's a lot faster and easier for the IAC to do it, plus it allows the technical folks to focus on their technical mission. And so the IACS take on that responsibility of, when individuals have technical requirements, going in and doing that background research, trying to see what might have been done in the past that could be relevant, and then providing that information to the folks that have the immediate technical requirements. We provide that to them and help them understand it, characterize the data for them. We may make some recommendations. For example, they may be trying to study a particular system's survivability capability, and it may be a new tracked vehicle that they're looking at. Well, we may be able to find some information on survivability of a wheeled vehicle, and we can provide some of that information over to the folks doing the tracked vehicle. We've actually done that within the UAV arena. Survivability was not a primary concern, first and foremost, with UAVs. They were originally, I don't want to call them throwaway, but they were expendable technologies. Then we recognized that we didn't want to leave that technology out in the field, and so the IAC came in with decades of experience working with manned aircraft and survivability, and able to bring that information to help the unmanned systems folks improve the reliability and the survivability of the unmanned vehicles.
So when I use the word duplication, that's probably not the right way to think about it. It's more about harnessing knowledge that already exists and that's been gained at a high cost in a lot of cases, and repurposing
right.
it.
Absolutely. So there's a significant cost that goes into the knowledge that we've gained in terms of not just dollars invested, but lives and livelihoods invested. And the IAC helps ensure that we're taking the best advantage of that by ensuring awareness, by doing some of that legwork up front in researching technical requirements, and then also by staying connected. You know, one of the challenges is sometimes folks don't know to ask the IACs for help. And so by promoting awareness that the IACs are out there, and by keeping the IACs connected to the technical community so that before someone engages and gets too committed down a certain path, the IAC can be consulted early on in the process and can help provide some a vector check and some direction.
So before we run out of time here, do you want to put a quick plug in for any particular methods by which people can ask for help if they would like some?
Certainly. So we have 8 IACs today. We're consolidating those down to 3. Rather than try to provide contact info
sure.
for each of the IACs, it's probably easiest for me just to direct folks to the main IAC website, which is HTTP, no www's, just http://iac.dtic.mil. And through that, they can find the latest information on where the IACs are, connect to the individual IAC that's most relevant to them, and find out where we are in the process of transitioning from 8 to 3. We'll have that transition completed by the summer of 2014, and in the meantime, certainly continue to work with the technical community to expand awareness that the IACs are there and what we can do to help.
Mm-hmm. Well, Christopher, it's been a really interesting hour. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for your time, Jared.
Christopher Zember is the director of DOD's Information Analysis Centers. We talked at his office at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, the headquarters of the Defense Technical Information Center, the parent organization of the IAC program. We will post links to some of the information we talked about during this hour at federalnewsradio.com/Jared Serbu, including a link to that CSIS report that we discussed, as well as some contact information for DOD's Information Analysis Centers. That's going to do it for this week's edition of On DOD. Very glad you could join us. Hope you'll be back with us again next week. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.